This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword.
Is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Episode number 108. I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt. Do you hear an echo?
You got so served last week, I have to say.
Or what are you talking about? Episode. I got served.
I was saying that I heard myself on your recording on your side, and you were like, no, you don't. And then
do
everyone
you hear
wrote
it
in.
Now?
I don't, but everyone wrote in was like, actually, yeah, we heard Veronica's echo. She wasn't crazy.
Damn it.
So I won that round, Merritt.
No, but I didn't do anything. The best one was the guy who called me on the telco effect. He's like, yeah, you know, that when you complain to a telco about something and they're like, we don't know what you're talking about, but then the problem goes away.
That's exactly what happened. It was the telco effect. You're the telco, Tom.
I didn't do anything. I totally did something.
Anyway, if you're just joining us for the very first time, this is a science fiction and fantasy podcast and book club where we discuss all the latest new releases and talk about what you guys are saying over in our forums, our number two top forum.
Number two.
Which I will get to later.
Down
on Goodreads.
Paranormal romance, urban fantasy people. We will conquer them.
We're coming for you. But anyway, so thank you for joining
us. Usually not this aggressive. Please stay and listen to the rest of the podcast, newcomers.
We're not that competitive. Yes, I am.
Totally, Veronica is.
So we usually kick off the show with a quick discussion of what are we drinking. And so, Tom, what are you drinking this evening?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Veronica, because it's number five in our lineup. I am drinking Anderson Valley Boont Amber Ale, which I believe I have drank before. This is not a new one to the show. Longtime listeners of the show may recognize this, but it's a Mendocino area. It's actually in Boonville, California, but near Mendocino. Mm-hmm. Amber ale. It's quite delicious.
Nice. I am drinking Carillon's Irish Cream. I'm not sure why I bought Carillon's and not Bailey's. I don't know why I have that.
Because you're like, Bailey's was cool before they sold out and became mainstream. So I'm going for the like hip. Liqueur, is that why?
I honestly don't know where it came from, but I'm drinking it on the rocks with a little bit of milk. Is that a White Russian?
Isn't a Bailey's? Wait, no, that's vodka and something.
You're right. Maybe it's vodka and Kahlua.
Yeah, it can't be a White Russian with Irish liqueur.
No,
that would be a White Irishman.
Well, oh, you're right. I'm drinking a White Irishman,
which I just invented.
I just invented a drink called the Redundant White Irishman, and it is ice cubes, Carillon's Irish Cream, not Bailey's. You have to use Carillon's.
And my throat.
And 2% milk.
So you made it a little creamier, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's like it's probably like 600 calories is what I'm guessing it's at this point.
So that's your dinner, is what you're saying.
No, I had Chinese food for dinner. So
okay,
this is the perfect nightcap.
This is an after dinner. Is that an aperitif?
What I'm saying is I'm very worldly.
Oh, it's a digestive. You're having a digestive.
I'm very worldly.
Yeah.
I eat and drink of all cultures.
Vodka and coffee liqueur is a White Russian. So
okay. That, so that would be like
Kahlua. And vodka.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm close. So if I added vodka to this, it would be better, you think?
It would be an Irish Russian.
An Irish Russian.
I guess.
I think I'm Irish Russian on my mother's side.
Are you really?
No,
I'm Scotch Irish.
Yeah.
No,
anyway, let's move on to the quick burns, which is actual news happening in the world.
Yes, and Forbes, which we don't get a chance to talk about quite enough on Sword and Laser, has released their list of 2011's top earning authors. Mm-hmm. As you might expect, people like Stephen King are on this. He's number two on the list, $39 million. But Suzanne Collins, author of The Hunger Games, has earned $20 million, placing her number nine on the list. Just behind her is Dean Koontz, who scored $19 million. And at number 11, J.K. Rowling. Suzanne Collins passed up J.K. Rowling.
And George R. R. Martin is nipping at her heels at number 12.
He is. He's right there. He just needs to put out another book.
There you go. That's all he has to do. Yeah, and Stephanie Meyer of Twilight fame earned $14 million and came in one place lower than George R. R. Martin. And finally, we have Rick Riordan of Percy Jackson fame at number 15, who made $13 million. Now, of course,
Trisha Harkins Bradley.
This is all around total earnings. This is not just book earnings, obviously. So people who have major film trilogies out right now, for example, or in the works, are doing a little bit better than most other authors out there.
I don't see E.L. James on here, but I bet we will.
And of course, this comes from the Word Zone. We didn't actually find that on Forbes.com.
Also from the Word Zone, just wanted to let people know, and I think we've mentioned this back in January, Adam Whitehead doing a summary of the Wheel of Time series to kind of get you prepared for Memory of Light, which comes out in January. Now, remember, he did this when A Dance with Dragons by George R. R. Martin came out. He did a series of posts kind of catching you up if you'd read the books, but you couldn't quite remember everything that happened. So those of you who have read the Wheel of Time series, he's back to posting. He kind of had a break in these posts, but parts 8 and 9 went up over the weekend. There's a lot of Wheel of Time series to catch up on. So there's going to be a lot of posts.
How does he find the time?
I don't know. But it's very impressive. Yes, yes, he is.
A god among nerds.
He's a prince among godly nerds.
Godly geeky nerds. So this post is particularly of interest to me. It comes from Io9, and it shows the evolutionary history of dragons as illustrated by a real scientist. Now, I find this absolutely fascinating. It's all about the phylogeny. Am I saying that right?
Yes.
Which is a graphical phylogeny, representation, right, of the hypothetical evolutionary relationships among different taxonomic groups, such as species,
taxonomic
genera, families, etc. Most phylogenies today are based on DNA sequences, but dragon tissue is tough to acquire. So they kind of made it up.
They pretty much made it up, but in a scientific way. Rob Kaladi of the University of British Columbia did this while writing his PhD in ecology and evolutionary biology at the University of Toronto, Canada, and just started to say, like, okay, what if I apply the science of phylogeny, the classification methods, to all of the dragons that I can find online?
Oh, this is so cool. So what he did is he identified 27 distinct traits that differentiated the 76 dragon art pieces that he used for his study. So he has two basic groups, Orientalia versus Eurasian dragons. So there's Orientalia, which would be an Oriental or a dragon from the Asian subcontinent or continent. What am I talking about? It's an entire taxonomic class containing the Asian dragons. And if we follow the lines connecting all of the Orientalia species, we see that they are more closely related to mammalia than they are to the dragons found in Eurasia, which are more like, lizards.
Right. There's like an entirely different branch. You have to go all the way back to kind of a coelacanth-like common ancestor for the Oriental dragons. Are the very easternmost dragons. He calls the other dragons Eurasian.
Because I just said that, yeah.
Yeah, I'm clarifying, because the dragons in Eurasia are not just European, but also have some Asian ancestors as well. But they're entirely distinct. And so the dragons that have wings are the Eurasian dragons. And then the dragons that you see in parades on Chinese New Year are the Eurasian, are the Orientalia.
So, okay, he says, let's see, to get the common ancestor of Eurasian Oriental dragons, we have to go way back to the time of the fish-like ancestors. If we follow the phylogeny down from Orientalia towards the center of the spiral, we see three main branches. This is long, but I think you guys will find it interesting. The first are the ancestral actinopterygii, which include modern fish and are a distinct group from all of the land vertebrates. The second branch, moving clockwise, includes both mammals and long. I'm probably not saying that right.
That's an Asian word for dragons, right?
Indicating that they share the same tetrapod fish-like ancestor, something like the modern-day...
coelacanth.
How the hell do you know how to say that?
It was one of the books that I did a report on in fourth grade.
I'm proud of you.
The Search for a Living Fossil.
That's amazing. In contrast, the Eurasian dragons must have shared an as yet unidentified hexapod fish-like ancestor, which gave rise to dragons with six appendages instead of four, i.e. four legs and two wings. The Dracopterinidae and the Dracoversidae. This assumes that complex appendages like wings or legs did not evolve out of nothing, which is probably a fair assumption. Continuing clockwise along the spiral, we see that the Wyvernidae
Wyvernidae. I would guess.
So some people say wyverns and wyverns.
Okay.
Maybe.
All right. Yeah.
That's how I say it in my brain.
Sure.
They gradually lost two wigs and then legs, and then they lost their wigs. They were suddenly
they're no longer wearing wigs. You can see their bald heads.
And then two more legs in the Serpenidae ancestors before losing wings in the more recently derived Serpenidae species at the top of the spiral.
I think what you're trying to say is there's a t-shirt.
There's a t-shirt you can buy that explains all this at the end.
Yeah. And it just and it has the cladistics all laid out, the entire phylogeny on the t-shirt of dragons, dragonkin, and dragonkind.
Love it. Very cool. I want that t-shirt. Where can I buy that t-shirt? I'm buying that t-shirt now. Oh, it's found Threadless. Let's link to it. I'm buying it.
I figured you would.
Oh my gosh, it's only available for four more days.
Hurry, run!
Ah, buy the t-shirt very quickly.
Meanwhile, while you do that, I will tell people that all 29 editions of the year's best science fiction anthologies are coming as e-books. October 16th, St. Martin's Press is going to have all 29 volumes of the annual survey available electronically, including the best of the best, 20 years of the best, modern classics of fantasy, the good old stuff, and the good new stuff. The series always wins awards. It won the Locus Award for Best Anthology 18 years, more than any other series. George R. R. Martin says of it, if a science fiction fan from 1984 chanced to stumble into a time warp and pop up in the here and now and wanted to know what had been happening in his favorite genre in the past 20 years, all you'd need to do was hand him a copy of Gardner's Best, chosen by the most respected editor in the field.
Great. That's very cool. I would love that. I would love to add that to my collection.
I would love to stumble out of time from 1984 into the modern world.
I would not be very helpful if I stumbled out of 1984.
By the way, when I was fourth grade and I wrote that report on the coelacanth, it was 1979.
Oh, yeah, hey, wasn't alive yet.
Ha! Here's great writing advice from this year's Clarion Science Fiction and Fantasy Writing Workshop.
Yes, this is fantastic. This comes from Cory Doctorow over on Boing Boing, and they're collecting some great little tidbits of knowledge. Let's read some of them.
Yeah.
A common way to structure stories is establish norm, upset norm, complicate, and escalate. Climax, resolution.
Yep. Whenever you think you're going to create a really strong character by putting I at the beginning of every sentence, you're digging yourself a hole. It's actually harder to bring I to life.
Mm. When it's broken, you don't always have to fix the whole thing. You can fix half. You just have to know which half. And that's not always easy.
The problem with people is they have beer and they want egg in it. Things are good and they're unsatisfied.
Mm. Usually for me, it's pizza and then I want egg on it.
You want egg on your pizza?
Dude, yeah. Like a soft-boiled egg.
Mm.
Like you just like a sunny-side-up egg just on the middle of the pizza on the very top. And then it gets all like yolky over the pizza. It's amazing.
Why have I never thought of that? That's amazing.
I don't know. We'll go pizza sometime. We'll go Delfina. Right. You'll love it. Opening the vein is where the best writing comes from.
Sure. You have to write things you genuinely are not sure about.
Frequently, your back brain is wiser than your front brain.
That's a good one. You left yourself a lot of hints that I don't think you even know about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, I did have a lot of that going on in my last NaNoWriMo when I went through and had some feedback on it.
Dude, I am stoked about the next NaNoWriMo. I have the whole thing in a simple note doc that I made on my vacation where I just laid out where I want to go with it.
Sounds like a great vacation.
That's what I do on vacation, I think. I don't have time to think the rest of the time.
No, I'm just joking. I read a lot on vacation.
I did a lot of reading too. Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
Yes, we will. So our final post for Quick Burns comes from Paid Content, another site that we often read, just not for this show. Digital Book World aims for a more accurate ebook bestseller list. I didn't really realize that this was a problem.
Well, it is becoming more and more of a problem as more ebooks sell, because it's kind of tearing apart the normal way that you survey and find out what's the best selling thing, right? Mm-hmm. When Amazon has this closed system of sales and you don't know what the actual numbers maybe really are, and you've got all these self-publishing people on Lulu and Pages all over the place, how do you get a handle on this? So that's what David Nussbaum, chairman and CEO of Digital Book World's parent company, publisher F&W Media, wants to do. They say it's a young business.
Their parent cuddly.
Their parent cuddly company, F&W Media, says because it is still a very young business, the entire channel, authors, agents, publishers, and consumers, need clear and focused information about bestsellers. So that's what they're going to attempt to do in making this new ebook bestsellers breakdown.
Hmm. Well, that is pretty cool. Because I can totally see why, with so many different closed systems, that can definitely become a problem. The list weighs data from Kindle, Nook, Google Kobo, and Sony.
Now, granted, you could probably guess the first half of the current e-bestsellers based on the week ending August 18th. 50 Shades Darker, 50 Shades Free, then Gone Girl, 50 Shades of Grey, Mockingjay, Bared to You, a Crossfire novel.
Wait a second.
Then Catching Fire, The Hunger Games, 50 Shades Trilogy combined.
Wait a second.
What?
The titles of the second and third book are 50 Shades Darker and 50 Shades Freed?
Yeah, those are the book 2 and 3 of the 50 Shades of Grey trilogy.
Where is where's the Diamond Club on this list?
I do not see Patricia Harkins Bradley's book here.
That's surprising.
Hmm.
I really thought that was taking off.
Well, it didn't beat any of the 50 Shades on iTunes, so maybe that's why.
Maybe that's why.
And they are combining this from many sources, not just one.
Not just iTunes. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, well, if you would like something to read other than 50 Shades of Grey, we highly recommend The Diamond Club by, what's her name?
Patricia Harkins Bradley.
Patricia Harkins Bradley.
Don't read it if you're even more, not easily offended, but even difficultly offended. If you can be offended, don't read it.
And if you want us to explain more, ask us privately. All right. Anyway, I think it's time to thank one of our sponsors. Is it that time?
No, it's calendar first. You're talking about giving people other options for reading.
Oh, wait, so I have to clarify one thing first. Sure. So Threadless is actually you can't get the dragon shirt first.
What?
Yet you have to, it's up for it's up for a competition. So you have to go and click that. It's like a fought number, like a,
oh, now it's a cause.
You get to rank it. Yeah. It's a cause. So if we want this shirt to get made, you guys have to go to the Threadless link and vote for it.
So you have to go to IO9 or to our show notes and find the IO9 link, then click the Threadless link at the bottom, go to Dragon Phylogeny, and then vote for it.
Yep.
How do you vote for it?
You click, there's numbers on the side, and hold on, I'm trying to find it.
So I rate it 5. Oh, and I have to log in. That's great.
Right, so I just logged in. Okay, so I'm logged in.
This is too hard.
It's not too hard. Why
is life so hard?
Don't you want this shirt?
Yes, I'm doing it.
Okay, so I'm giving it a 5. Yay! Now I don't know what happens. Now I gave it a 5, and I don't know what's going to happen now. So, we'll see.
Really, Threadless, just to rate, I have to give you all of this stuff?
I just connected it with my Facebook.
That's what I'm doing.
NBD.
Really? Really? And then you don't take me back to the page? Then
okay. I know. I didn't like that. I didn't want to go for more things.
I don't like.
All right. On to the calendar.
Finally. Okay.
There, 20th, you will get a Sword and Laser podcast. That is actually today.
That's so you'll today.
Get very late tonight.
August 21st, Wards of Faerie, The Dark Legacy of Shannara by Terry Brooks. Shannara fans are very excited. This is coming out. Fate of Worlds, Return from Ringworld, Larry Niven and Edward Lerner. Ringworld fans, very excited. This is coming out. Mm-hmm. And The Unincorporated Future by Danny Cullen and Ayton Cullen, also coming out.
Yay. And then on August 28th, we have Seven Wonders by Adam Christopher, who we just interviewed on the video version of the show. So you can see that now over at youtube.com/geekandsundry. Also, Devil Said Bang, a Sandman Slim novel by Richard Kadrey. Angel Fall, Penryn, and the End of Days by Susan E. That can't be her name. Is that her name?
Yep.
Okay. She has two vowels as her last name. That's cool.
She does. Yeah. Not just one.
Just
greedy.
Just two. Just two E-E. I like that. And also Sanctuary, The Outcast Chronicles by Rowena Corey Daniels.
And coming up August 31st, 2008, will be the Sword and Laser video show with guest Gary Whitta, the screenwriter, and our Sword and Laser book club video wrap-up of Assassin's Apprentice by Robin Hobb. And then September 1st, we're at Dragon Con. We got more details on that at the end of the show.
Absolutely. I'm super excited for Dragon Con. It's going to be really
I am too, actually. I'm getting more excited all the time.
Yay. And so now a moment to thank our sponsors. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. What should we recommend this week?
Well, if you want to get a jump on things, our book for September will be Foundation, which is available as an audiobook. That
is
might
it?
Be one.
Is it?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I'm listening to it in preparation.
It's good. I'm almost done with that book, actually.
Or you could listen to something from R.A. Salvatore.
You could do that as well.
Because we're going to interview R.A. Salvatore at Dragon Con.
We will, indeed. Yeah, that's a great idea. So if you want a free audiobook, head over to audiblepodcast.com/sword. And that's audiblepodcast.com/sword once again to get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today.
Yeah, you can do any of those. You don't have to do what we say. Just go
millions
there.
Millions of them.
Get a free book. And if you're like, I'm already an Audible subscriber, you crazy people, you've been telling me about this forever, give it to a friend. They don't even have to be listening. You can just give them the URL and they get a free book.
You can just pretend like you're really savvy and you know all the cool codes to get free stuff.
Exactly. And they're going to be like, wow, who is this very fine specimen of humanity who's helping me to get a free audiobook?
There you go. Maybe you'll get a date out of it. You don't know.
Who knows? Yeah. Or money.
Instead of presents, you could just give our code away to people.
Exactly.
For Christmas and Hanukkah.
Press your friends at cocktail parties.
There you go.
It's like, I'm going to give everyone at this cocktail party a free audiobook.
You didn't even have to do anything. Anyway, let's move on to Bear Your Sword, which is our feedback from the audience. Up first, we have a post from Eric, who's talking about the coolest sci-fi weapons. He says, so, I'm not the biggest sci-fi fan, having firmly planted my sword in the ground, but I was recently brainstorming weapons for a sci-fi story, and I was wondering, what are the coolest sci-fi, sci-fiction-y weapons, in your opinion? Not necessarily the most destructive, just the ones you have a special place in your heart for. I think probably one of the most famous is the lightsaber, a la Star Wars, with a nice mix of the old and the new. Another favorite of mine is the ultimate nullifier from Fantastic Four, both the original that scared off Galactus and the ultimate comics version that destroys an infant universe every time it's used.
Wow. I like the Chris knife. Somebody mentioned that in this thread. It's the tooth of Shai Halud from Dune.
Right.
And then it's like a ceremonial knife.
Mm. I'm trying to think. You know, I've been having a hard time trying to... I added this thread like hours and hours ago, and I just can't think of a good weapon that is really like my favorite or like coolest sci-fi weapon.
You know, one that's top of mind is Bobby's suit from Caliban's War. By James S.A. Corey.
Oh, I haven't read that yet. That's not fair.
Oh, it's not a spoiler. I mean, she's a Marine and she's got this kick-ass suit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe some of the I can't remember what they're called, that the biotics use in Mass Effect. Not the biotics, the Sentinels.
It's science fiction-y.
It's science fiction.
Somebody said they like the identity discs from Tron. It's a very elegant weapon from a more civilized age.
Catfish says a slightly damp towel.
That's a Hitchhiker's reference,
yeah,
right?
Of course.
I'm thinking.
I think you're probably right.
Yeah. The Weirding Way from Dune. I think the best weapons come from Dune.
Is that a weapon? I guess that's a weapon.
Well, you can use it as a weapon.
Okay. Well, yeah, if you guys want to add more, head over to that forum thread, Coolest Sci-Fi Weapons, and tell everyone what you think is the coolest sci-fi weapon out there. We want to know.
We're number two. We're number two.
As I mentioned earlier, we are honored and privileged to be the number two largest group on Goodreads. Yay!
So Otis of Goodreads posted a thank you on August 13th, talking about the fact that they've got 10 million members on Goodreads now, and pointed out the five largest groups on Goodreads: Poetry, The Next Best Book Club, Boxall's 1001 Books You Must Read Before You Die, and The Sword and Laser, and then also that Paranormal Romance and Urban Fantasy that we're going to take down.
Yes, I am a member of Paranormal Romance and Urban Fantasy.
Ah, good, we have a spy.
So I didn't realize, like, I figured we were probably up there. Like, I figured we probably had a good number of people compared to other groups. But since I'm in that group, and I'm also in the Goodreads Librarians, which is actually the largest group, but I don't think he counted that.
He's not
that
counting because that's an admin group, sort of.
Right. And that one has like 18,000 users. So I see those on my group page along with our own. And so in my mind, we're not that weird or we're not that big because I already, in my mind, that's just how big groups are.
Because we're so close to taking them.
Maybe.
In their top position.
So, you know, Paranormal Romance has not grown as quickly as we have. I mean, we've jumped at least 5,000 members in the past year. So I think that we will hopefully, I hope we can outpace them and be the biggest group just for bragging rights. I think that
we will
really
slice and burn them with our swords and lasers.
We have a very active group and a very awesome group. So I'm super happy.
We definitely have the best quality per capita.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. You know, we definitely have certain members that are, you know, representing a lot more than others. But that's great. And I think there was a thread that I read recently that people are kind of concerned that there's not like enough moderation with the book club stuff going on, and that, like, you know, too many people are posting about the book the very first day we start discussing it. You know, they've already read it, so they're posting spoilers. But I think the group overall does a really good job of moderating itself and taking care of its own. We've always kind of let it do its own thing. You know, we're there. We jump in when things get really hairy. Every once in a while.
Which they don't that often.
They don't that often, no, thankfully. But I think you guys do a really wonderful job of kind of looking out for each other and keeping the discussions going and keeping the discussions interesting. And frankly, you just don't need us to step in that much. Like, we step in when we have opinions or stuff to say. But Frank, I don't think you guys need that much policing.
And frankly, you know what? I understand people are like, wait a minute. Some people go in on day one and they're like already finished with the book. That's just going to happen. Mm-hmm. That was why I never wanted to post ahead of time what the books are, because it doesn't really matter. I mean, when we announce the book, now people will begin reading it. And that's the way it's going to be. And so I gave up that fight. I'm like, fine, just let people know what it is ahead of time so they can plan. But if you want to be able to plan, you're going to have to put up with the fact that some people read ahead. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and just as long as people are very good about using the spoiler tag, signifying like, hey, this thread shouldn't be read until you're this far into the book, I think it's okay.
Yeah,
I think
you could be mindful of other people. You know, I think that's really the best policy.
I also like on Otis's post, he has the 10 most reviewed books on Goodreads. Many sci-fi and fantasy novels up there: 1984, Animal Farm, ooh, Hunger Games, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, or Philosopher's Stone if you're English. And then there's also Twilight, Da Vinci Code, To Kill a Mockingbird, Catcher in the Rye, The Great Gatsby, and Pride and Prejudice.
Very cool. That's awesome. Yeah, Goodreads is one of those sites I think that I will be using for a very long time. And I'm not just saying that because I'm an advisor.
I was using Goodreads before we ever started Sword and Laser. Long, long ago, long back in the day. And then we started using it for Sword and Laser, and that made me use it even more. And then you became an advisor, and it's just a great site.
Yeah. So very cool. Good stuff. Thank you guys for alerting us to that. I knew they had reached the 10 million user mark a couple days before they announced it, but I had no idea that we
because
were
you're
that
such
high
an
up
insider.
Because I'm an insider. I'm an insider. That does not give me any special treatment, by the way. I think actually that's not true. The only special treatment we have ever gotten from me being an advisor is that we got to test out the video portion of the video embeds in the group pages before other people did.
I'm not an insider.
That's okay. I'm insider.
I'm not even a librarian.
You're not?
No.
Oh, you should be a librarian.
I know.
I'll help you. I'll try.
I'm going back to school to get my master's of library science.
Awesome.
So I can be a librarian on Goodreads.
That'd be really funny. but let's catch up with the book pick a little bit. A lot of you
Did you want to mention TV, movie, and games just real quickly?
Oh, I thought we were there already. Did I skip something? I did skip something.
You skipped Kieran Hines has been cast as Mance Rayder.
Oh, and this.
Anybody who watched Rome on HBO will recognize him. He was Julius Caesar.
Yeah, I think he's great, but he looks so old for Mance for me.
Well, and apparently Mance is older. Adam Whitehead at WordZone points out they've talked about Mance Rayder as if he's been around for decades, and he's a contemporary of what's his name, the head of the wall. Mormont. Mormont.
Not Jorah.
The other Mormont.
Yeah.
And so I guess they're just going to make him an older Mance Rayder than is in the books.
I guess.
Now, what's funny about this? He's also Albert Forth Dumbledore. In case you didn't know, they originally offered this to McNulty from The Wire.
Oh, that would have been so cool.
And he turned it down.
Why did you turn it down?
And apparently his kids, Eileen was telling me this story, what do you mean you turned it down? What's wrong?
What are you smoking?
And he turned it down because he didn't want to work too much. His schedule was getting too full and wanted to spend more time with his family. And then his family's like, you're crazy. Oh, you should never turn that down.
You dummy.
He would have been perfect for that, too.
Dummy. Oh, that would have been so awesome.
Dominic West, by the way, is the actor's name who played McNulty.
Oh, God. I love The Wire. Well, it's okay. I liked Rome, too, a lot, and I think he's a great actor. So, okay. Well, we'll see how that goes. It'll be great, I'm sure. Do I sound convinced? I don't sound convinced.
You don't sound convinced, no. But he will convince you because he's the king beyond the wall.
He is. So let's move on to a little chat about Assassin's Apprentice, our current book pick. Now there will be some spoilers in this discussion. So if you haven't, gotten towards the end of the book, maybe now would be a good time to skip forward or listen later. So KP makes a thread about Trude's command, towards the end of the book when they're up in the Mountain Kingdoms. So in the end, August informs us that he spoke with the king via Skill and told Fitz to listen to Regal. To me, this seems out of context with Shrewd's character. I was wondering if anyone else thought this. My thoughts are that August never actually contracted the king. My thoughts are that August never actually...
I've contracted a bad case of the king.
Shut up. My thoughts are that August never actually contacted the king and really got his orders from Galen. I'm thinking this because, all right, is that how they say his name in the audiobook? Or Galen? Do they say Galen?
Galen? Yep.
I'm thinking this because Fitz was unable to contact Shrewd when he was in the pool, and we do know that Fitz is a lot more strong with the skill than August. I assume that August asked Galen to ask the king, but he never did because he was in league with Regal and also wanted Fitz gone because Fitz was so much stronger in the skill than Galen was. So, does anyone else think that Shrewd was never contacted with the Mountain Prince, about the Mountain Prince, rather?
Well, Stan pointed out, and in fact, he found the quote, that they say, and I quote, "Shrewd in crown and robe upon his throne was all unknowing. His skill burned and dulled away years ago by misuse, and him too proud to admit it." So even if August had tried to contact Shrewd, he wouldn't have been able to. Mm-hmm. Shrewd didn't have the skill. I guess you can contact somebody who doesn't have the skill, but... I'm guessing that pretty much means August just brushed it off. Was like, August probably couldn't use it very well, right?
Right.
None of those guys were as good as Fitz. So I think it's pretty consistent to believe that August pretended to use it, didn't figure Fitz would bother checking to see if he was using it, and then just said, yeah, he says do whatever Regal says, because that's plausible.
Yeah, but of course Fitz knows that that's maybe not that plausible. But then there's a lot more questions too. Like, why did Shrewd not send Lady Time? Why did he send Fitz? Is Fitz a patsy? David Sven is asking. One of my big questions is how did Galen ever go against Verity's wishes when chivalry and Verity were imprinted on Galen with the skill? You know, he was supposed to be loyal to them even without wanting to be.
Well, that's a good question, but I think it's because he's not betraying chivalry. He thinks he's defending chivalry. Does that make sense? I mean, in his own mind.
I guess if he's not lying to himself, he can't.
Right. He's a twisted sense of loyalty, but.
Right. So yeah, a lot of interesting questions. That's definitely something I thought about in the reread, a point that stood out to me, like, well, why is this? I don't know if that really happened, like the way that he's saying it happened. But of course we don't have any proof either way because it was all in August's mind.
Yeah. I tended to believe at the time. I'm like, August didn't send that message. He wouldn't. He wouldn't bother. He wouldn't bother spending the effort that's hard for him on Fitz's behalf.
Yeah.
He wouldn't think Fitz would be able to tell if he was faking anyway.
So interesting stuff to think about, for sure. And maybe more will be revealed as we get further into the trilogy if anyone continues reading it. And we have some more spoilery discussion in Goodreads. Ending questions. Now, this is obviously dealing with the ending. Valerie asks, I've been following Sword and Laser since YouTube show started, but I've only now worked up the courage to join the discussion. Welcome, Valerie. I very much enjoyed Assassin's Apprentice, but one question remained after finishing it. I'm going to spoiler lock everything just in case because my dad keeps spoiling things for me.
Dad, stop spoiling things for Valerie.
What happened to Nosy? At the beginning, when Burridge takes Nosy away, I, like many people, thought that there was a sudden flash of red pain and Nosy was gone meant that Burridge had killed Nosy. Then at the end, we find Nosy is alive and well, and Burridge's character partially redeemed. I'm very curious as to how Burridge severed the bond between Fitz and Nosy. Distance doesn't seem to be a factor with Fitz and Smithy later, so just taking the puppy away shouldn't matter. I'm taking it to mean that Burridge used his own wit abilities to sever the bond, hating himself for doing so. If so, I'm starting to think the wit might be connected with forging. I haven't read any of Hobbes' other books, so perhaps my questions will be answered later in the series. Anyone have another interpretation?
I found this a very good post because I had assumed that it was distance, because Fitz was young, that severed the bond, and that when he got older, he was able to form a stronger bond with Smithy than he could then. But I don't think on reflection that makes sense. I think the bond is the bond and distance is irrelevant. And they talk about how distance is irrelevant to the skill. So why would it be relevant to the wit? So I think Valerie's got a really good point. I think that it must be, and this is speaking as someone who's only read book one. So all of you guys who've finished all the books and are laughing up your sleeve at me, this is totally out of ignorance. But I think it is Burridge using a bit of his wit against his better judgment, but sort of because he has to.
Some people are also wondering if maybe Burridge had knocked out Nosy. And that Nosy,
I don't think that would cause, I don't know, would a knocked out Smithy, he could still tell Smithy was alive when Smithy was like unconscious.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think that would work. You've read all the books, though, don't you? Do you not know?
I read them decades ago. You know, frankly, I remember major plot points, but I don't remember all the little ins and outs as much as I would want to. It really was one of the first series I ever read, so it's not exactly fresh in my brain.
Well, Camille says you will have your questions answered, but you're following a good thought pattern in response to Valerie. So
intriguing.
Yes, quite.
So what else are you reading?
Well, as I accidentally admitted, I'm reading Foundation early. Don't do that. It's not September yet. But I am also reading Caliban's War by James S.A. Corey, the sequel to Leviathan Wakes, which was our book pick last month. And I find it quite different, but good. When I say quite different, I mean, it's not like you're just picking up Leviathan Wakes and continuing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's going in different directions than Leviathan Wakes went. And I think that's a good thing. You're still following the Rocinante crew, but they've changed. The events have changed them. And they've spent a year since Leviathan Wakes time doing other things. And so those characters are growing. I swear they get more and more Firefly-like the more I read about them. But maybe that's just my own interpretation, like pasted upon them. But Amos seems to be like a weird teleportation accident that merged Kaylee and Jane into one being. And then Alex has got sort of this like Texas Martian take on Walsh. And there's, I see more Mal in the captain all the time, especially given the troubles that he's been through. Like, he's losing his innocence. I don't know. And I think that's great. I don't mean that as a criticism. I mean that as a big positive. And there's a whole cast of new characters. So there's still several different threads going on, and the threads merge and cross. But obviously we don't have Miller anymore as a perspective character. So we have a new perspective character who is a functionary in the UN on Earth who is brilliant. She's a Indian subcontinent, generally speaking, mm-hmm. woman who's an assistant undersecretary, but she kind of runs the Earth from her position below the main powers, because she's very good at her job. And it's a fascinating character, especially if you're into like politics and the wheels and mechanisms of how that stuff works. That's great. And there's also Bobby, who I mentioned earlier, with the Marine, Bobby Draper, Roberta Draper. She's also kind of a Brienne character. I loosely compare her to Brienne from Song of Ice and Fire.
Wow. Nice. You sound very excited about this book. I could like hear your face smiling.
I spent the weekend reading it on my vacation. It was my vacation reading. And it's one of those things where I wasn't slogging through it like, well, it's vacation, I got nothing else to do, guess I'll read this book. Yeah. Like, I was finding excuses to read it. Like, Eileen would go in like, can I go in this dress shop? And I was like, yes, go in. I will take this time to read more. Nice. So yeah, it's a good thing.
Good. Well, I'm also not early reading Foundation. So, I don't really have too much else to talk about. Oh, I'm finishing up the Gail Carriger book that I'm reading, who, by the way, recommended our podcast on her blog
recently.
That was recently.
So nice of her.
Thank you very much, Gail. Huge fan, and I would love to have you on the show sometime, of course, but we'll get in touch off podcast, I hope.
Call us,
or we'll call you, and please answer.
Oh, you know what? I also read a non-science fiction book for the first time in a long time.
What?
I know, right? Herman Koch. Koch. He's a Dutch writer. It's only available in the UK, so I had to import it from Amazon.co.uk. Called The Dinner. Fast read. I read it in 2 days, and I'm a slow reader. But it was a really interesting book that takes place over the course of a dinner. Two families whose children have committed an unspeakable act, and they're trying to figure out how to deal with it.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that sounds pretty interesting. Cool.
I'll let you borrow it.
Okay. Yeah. Otherwise, I'm not really reading much. I finished my vaginal fantasy pick for this month, so I'm ahead on that. I finished the sword and laser picks, and so I'm reading ahead a little bit. But I want to finish the Codex Alera. I've got a lot of stuff that I want to catch up on. I still have to finish book two in the Hyperion series. So yeah, a lot of stuff to catch up with.
There's always the Diamond Club.
Highly recommended. Let's. We have a quick voicemail from Casey. Let's take a listen.
Hey, you guys. I just wanted to say thank you. I guess my name is Casey, but I'm a member of your Sword and Laser Book Club group, and it's really cool. And I just...
Thank you, Casey. Welcome to the book club. I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Well, yeah, thanks. I'm glad. I feel like we left you speechless. I'm sorry.
All right, well, I guess that's all we've got today, but we do have Dragon Con coming up in a matter of days.
Saturday, September 1st, so less than 2 weeks from now, we will be at Dragon Con live. You will need a Dragon Con pass to see the past. You will need to have a pass with Dragon Con. No, you need a pass to be able to come into our Sword and Laser podcast live, but keep an eye out. We may be cooking something else up outside of Dragon Con for a meetup or something like that. But if you're in town in Atlanta and you're going to Dragon Con, come to the Crystal Ballroom in the Hilton at 2:30 p.m. on Saturday. We'll be interviewing R.A. Salvatore, and you can't miss it. It's going to be awesome. And then Veronica will be hosting the Parsec Awards later that evening in the International North Room in the Hyatt at 4:30 p.m. with Scott Sigler, and I'll be presenting one of the awards.
Yay! That'll be fun. I don't know what funny stuff we're going to do yet, but hopefully we'll do some funny stuff. That's what I'm
I'll feed Sigler some stuff.
There you go. Perfect. Yeah. Give him like an inside track my on my humor or something. Right. I don't know. So yeah, we're very excited to see you guys all there. I will be in full cosplay this year for the very first time. not the for all of my panels. The whole time. But we are going to do a little thing where you're going to have to try to find me. That's the plan. I'm not going to say what I'm cosplaying as.
So you're going to be in disguise?
I'm going to kind of pull an Adam Savage and do a little secret cosplay and see if anyone can figure out it's me.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be in cosplay as a guy was as Jane Cobb because I'll have jeans and a Blue Sun t-shirt on.
There you go.
So
awesome.
Try and find me.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to get in touch with us, the email address is feedback@swordandlaser.com. The website is swordandlaser.com. All of our discussions happen over on the second largest group on goodreads.com. And if you want to call us, the phone number is 415-7-SWORD-6. That's 415-779-6736. We will see you guys next time.
Yosh.